Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Good day, Montreal. Good day, Canadians who are listening on the net. Today, we're going to devote the entire show to a very controversial topic. We've called it Free Speech versus State Faith, the Muslim Riots and the Menace of Mind Control, the Next World War. We've witnessed the past 10 days a surge in violence around the world over these supposedly offensive cartoons. And we Canadians so often like to think that we're immune from anything that happens abroad. We pay more attention to sports stories than to anything else. But this finally came home to roost this week. These riots were not spontaneous. There's enough evidence to suggest that they were well-planned over a period of months. These riots were shameful. These riots were shameful because it led radical Islamists to picture all Muslims who had acculturated in the West to our traditions of liberalism and pluralism as being fanatics. These riots were shameful because rather than use the approaches of justice and dialogue, they did violence to people and to property. These riots were shameful because they were hypocritical. At the same time that these Islamists objected to caricatures and freedom of expression, they practiced the same anti-Jewish and anti-Christian cartooning, lampooning, and absolute vituperation in their own countries. But more than anything else, these riots were shameful because they opened a second front to the physical terrorist war we've been fighting over the past few years. They opened a psychological front of terror, a psychological front of terror that set neighbor against neighbor and imposed on us, even here in Canada, the virus of self-censorship, a virus of political correctness that led this week alone to two young men who edited a student newspaper at the University of PEI to be censored by the administration, that led a respected philosophy professor at St. Mary's University to be reprimanded by the administration, that led a demonstrator in Montreal who was peacefully just holding up a placard to be attacked by demonstrating Muslims as being a provocateur. This is not acceptable in our society. Freedom of expression can have no limits other than the limit of incitement to violence. It's strange that the French Interior Minister, Nicolas Sarkozy, said, between excessive caricature and excessive censorship, I prefer excessive caricature. It was old Europe that was defending the values, the liberal pluralistic values that we hold so dear here in this country. And we're going to examine this problem and this issue and how it spread. We're going to examine it in three ways. We're going to examine this as a parallel to the physical war of terror that the Islamists are now engaged in. We're going to examine this as a foreign policy issue and how it can be dealt with the men who are leading it from the Middle East. And we're going to examine this as Canadians and how we have to react to this virus of self-censorship that we've imposed on ourselves, this virus of fear. The best epitaph, if we don't realize what we're up against right now, was written by Amir Tahiri, who was our guest last week. He's a leading Iranian dissident and author based in London. And he said, the fight between Denmark and its detractors is not between the West and Islam. It is between democracy and a global fascist movement masquerading as religion. For immigrants from whatever country, or race, or creed, cannot descend on the industrialized West, hoping to improve their economic conditions, and at the same time demanding that the West abandon centuries of freedom for statist faith that their religious demands might dictate. If they want financial benefits from free economies, they must also respect the liberties of our free politics. Freedom of religion guarantees only that everyone has a right to worship in their own fashion without restriction or resistance from any state authority. Conversely, that freedom also implies that all people must have the freedom to be let alone from religion if they so choose, without any coercion from any group. And we'll be right back after this with our first guest.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
You know, I'm president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal. With me in studio is Rick McConomy. And on the line with us is former CIA Director James Woolsey. Several years ago, the Institute ran a conference on security and trade. And when it was announced that Mr. Woolsey would be the keynote speaker, I received a note saying, please tell Mr. Woolsey that he took the storehouse of reason and sanity out of Washington when he left. If there's one man who knows more than he should, which is a tagline that the station here likes to use, it's Jim Woolsey. Since leaving the CIA, he is now Vice President for Global Strategies for Booz Allen Hamilton. He's been involved with Freedom House, co-chairman with Senator Joe Lieberman and the Honorable George Shultz on the Committee on the Present Danger. Jim Woolsey, thank you for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Beryl.
Jim, a recent communique from the Committee on the Present Danger, and I quote, "The militant Islamists cannot be appeased. They will wage war until they are stopped," Woolsey said. "We believe that the U.S. and the international community should energetically assist the millions of Iranians who want a government that does not repress its own people and threaten others." Putting aside the question of Iran for a second, we now have a lot of evidence to show that these demonstrations were organized by a fellow named Abu Laban from Denmark with the help of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Iran.
Sure.
Is this the second front in the physical terror war? Is this the psychological terror war?
In a sense, yes. I think this is Muslim Brotherhood operating as everybody I think knows by now. These cartoons, there were several, but the one that got the people in the Middle East so angry was one of Muhammad dressed up like a pig, and that was never published in Denmark. That was an invention of these Islamists who took it around.
Which they've admitted, I understand.
Right, sure. This is taqiyya, it's called. Essentially, lying to the infidels is fine.
Abu Laban said that he just wanted to underline how bad the original cartoons were, so he put in four new ones.
Sure. They don't care about accuracy or anything like that. That's not part of what they're doing. This is basically an effort to establish on the part of the Sunnis, the Sunni Islamists, and certainly not all Sunnis, a worldwide caliphate. Now, they realize it'll take a long time to get there, but they basically it's a world ruling totalitarian ideology, very much like world communism or the Thousand Year Reich or whatever.
It's
religious, not secular.
You've written that the new war, this new war, and this formulation that we use for the program. I want to tell our listeners very much yours. You've qualified World War III actually as being the Cold War using Elliot Cohen's formulation, and you call this World War IV. And you've written that this new war is actually against three enemies: the religious rulers of Iran, the fascists of Iraq and Syria, and Islamic extremists like Al Qaeda. Now we know that Abu Laban and his group out of Denmark did receive help from the Wahhabis, from Qataris, and from the Iranians. When Secretary of State Rice came out in London recently and said the evidence points sharply that Syria and Iran were behind this, how much of that will be acted on, if any, do you think?
Well, I don't know that what the U.S. at least would act upon is precisely this, but it's the overall context with respect to Iran of having this president, Ahmadinejad, who's clearly a fanatic, and thinks that he's been sent here to pave the way for the Mahdi to return and the world to end. He's thrown in with some groups in Iran that were too radical for Khomeini, for gosh sakes. He has obviously a nuclear weapons program, so we're going to have to deal with that. I mean, with a lot of this, I think the cartoon business and so forth, one deals with it as much as one can by telling the truth and having an effective public diplomacy campaign, which we really don't have much. But with respect to nuclear weapons in the hands of a fanatic who wants to end the world, that's a little different.
What do you say to the vast majority of Muslims in the West that are fully at peace with the liberal pluralistic West, who are law abiding? What can be said to them to give them some comfort when we know that we should really be paying attention to Iran and to Al Qaeda and to the Wahhabis when they say that we want Islamic hegemony? What comfort can be given to the Western Muslim citizens?
There are hundreds of millions of good and decent Muslims in the world. I mean, you know, take Indonesia's largest Muslim country in the world, and although there are some Islamists there, on the whole, it's a reasonably secular and moderate society. There are hundreds of millions of Muslims who we have common cause with, and we need to continually let them know that. But there's kind of a civil war within Islam, and part of the problem is that the fanatics have the oil money. This is one of the only wars we've ever fought, probably the only one in which we're paying for both sides. We ship, the world ships $160 billion to Saudi Arabia every year now for its oil, and the Saudis give three or four of that to the Wahhabis, and the Wahhabis use it to set up madrasas in Pakistan and, for that matter, Islamic institutes in Canada and the United States, and they teach hideous stuff. They teach the same stuff about Shia and Sufis and Christians and Jews and women, music, democracy that Al-Qaeda teaches. Which
Jim, can you stay with us for a few more minutes? We'll be right back with you after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. 40 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
We're back, and we're talking with former CIA Director Jim Woolsey. Jim, I know your schedule is very tight. I want to close with you on one point. You use a very stirring line in many of your papers and speeches, where you say that the United States has finally noticed what's going on. The United States is on the march, and we plan to make a lot of people and a lot of regimes in the Middle East very nervous. What would you say to those in the West that are practicing their own self-censorship, and they're too nervous themselves to maintain the same kind of principles that we're all fighting for?
Relax. Look, there were five terrible dictatorship empires in the 20th century. The Wilhelmine German, the Nazis, the fascists, the Japanese imperialists, and the Soviet communists. They're all gone, and we're still here. Let's take these guys on and win this thing.
On that note, Jim Woolsey, many thanks for your time today.
Okay.
Let's take it on and win this thing. We're going to Daniel on the phone.
Yes, how are you?
Very well, yourself?
Not too bad. I like your introduction.
Thank you.
But there were two significant flaws in those introductions.
Go ahead.
I'm going to explain it with a parable. The first one is...
Make it a short parable because they're going to kill you on commercial time.
The first one is, physician, heal thyself. And the second one is that, why don't you remove the mote in your eye so that you could see clearly, to remove the beam in your brother's eye?
Well, what do you want us to remove to see clearly?
Yeah, what I do not understand is that the Western nations, why do they always like confrontation?
The West wants confrontation?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, where was the Muslim outrage when people were killed in London, in New York, in Bali, when six school children were killed in India? Where was the Muslim outrage? Why weren't they in the streets? The West wants confrontation? Where was the Muslim outrage when every single day in Arab press there are anti-Jewish and anti-Christian caricatures every single day? Where is the Muslim outrage when 16-year-old girls are being hanged by the neck in town squares because they killed their rapists?
I agree with you.
Please, Daniel.
I agree with you, but we have to understand that in every bunch of fruits, there is a large portion of the...
Daniel, I'll agree with you on this. I'll agree with you on this. There are obviously great sensitivities when it comes to religion. But more importantly is the freedoms that we hold dear. Nobody is saying that anybody's happy when there's a caricature of Muhammad or Abraham or Moses or Jesus. But nobody goes in the streets and does violence to their neighbors.
I didn't hear the United States condemning Denmark. The news media, the news company in Denmark, which really portrays...
Why should they? Freedom of expression is freedom of expression. There is no reason to condemn anybody. Freedom of expression, short of incitement to violence, cannot be condemned. And maybe if the citizens in Arab countries had those rights, we wouldn't have the problems we have today. Andy's next on the line.
Mr. Wiseman.
Yes, Andy.
Yeah, the thing is this. Have you ever read the Quran?
Yes.
Okay. Did you read the history of Muhammad from the time that he started, from the time that the 13 years when he arrived at his destination
yes.
with all the things?
Yeah.
Now, if you read that, which I was reading last night and I've read several times, I read it over and over. The Muslim religion, it might be good, it might be on the right side or right ideas, good, benevolent, and all those things. But the
What's
Muslim
your point, Andy?
Religion, when Muhammad started it, it came two ways. One,
Andy, what's the point?
In influencing the people, and the second, the sword.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into Quran or Muslim bashing because if you go back
it's
to the old
bashing.
Because if you go back to the Old Testament, there's plenty of violence there. There's 98 ways to get killed.
Yeah, but this is the history, the way it was started.
No, it was started. It was started the same way in all religions at the beginning.
And each Muslim has a choice on how he interprets where it's going and how it influences his life. It's a very free religion, and the choices are there. When you make the bad choices, you got to live by them.
You want to go back to the Christian Crusades and how the Jews came into the Promised Land
yes.
and the wars among the kings. You've got the same thing. Andy, we'll get right back to you after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back and we're talking about free speech versus state faith. Is this the next world war, the Muslim riots and the menace of mind control? And we have two very special guests on the line with us. Who can speak to the role played on the ground in the Middle East by the Islamists and also the export of this kind of psychological terror. From London, we welcome Colonel Peter Reynolds, who's recently returned as an advisor to the United Nations Election Oversight Team for the Iraq elections. He's also been former head of public affairs for NATO. Welcome, Peter.
Hi there, Beryl.
And from Ottawa, David Harris, former chief of strategic planning for CSIS and the president of Insignis Strategic Research. And David has the... he would call it a dubious honor. I call it a great honor to have actually been sued by the Canadian-American Islamic Relations Committee. Welcome, David.
Hello, Beryl. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
David, if you permit, we'll start with Peter. Peter, what is going on the ground? How much in the Arab states are the Islamists controlling the broad base of the people?
I think there is a small change going on. Even in states like Jordan, where I spent the last couple of weeks, you are getting more and more of the young and disaffected youth perhaps protesting in the streets when they would not have done so before. And that, I think, is a great change.
Yet in Jordan, we just heard that two editors who published these cartoons were arrested in their offices.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Among the 60-odd newspaper people who were arrested.
Yeah, I think, and it will probably, for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months, will engender even more change throughout the Middle East and probably make the youngsters a little bit more hardline.
David, from your experience, David Harris in Ottawa, how much of a lead have the local groups taken from the Islamist leadership in the Middle East, groups such as CAIR?
I can't comment, on the basis of legal advice on anything relating to
Forget CAIR. About CAIR.
Yeah.
The influence from the Middle East on groups in North America and the liberal West.
Yeah, I think there's been a kind of complementarity, shall we say, to some of the initiatives. There are already the questions you've probably explored about the extent to which the whole Danish thing was really quite consciously elevated, escalated, agitated, and irritated by radical imams, initially in Denmark, and then, of course, in Europe, ultimately to spur some of the more dramatic developments, the greater violence that we've seen in the Middle East. One of the real concerns in the West itself is, of course, that these influences spill over here. And we sometimes find, and we've seen this in France, we've seen it in the United States, serious observers feel it's going on in Canada, that there is a tendency to try to agitate rather than to ameliorate, to ease the situation. There is a tremendous persecutory kind of neurosis being encouraged amongst otherwise moderate, reasonable Muslims in North America and the West. by groups who seem bent on making a case for what they call Islamophobia.
Peter, are you seeing that in London, the kind of attitude that Jasper Girard referred to in the Sunday Times as Islam being protected by an invisible blasphemy law called fear?
To some extent, but I mean, what we're seeing here is there is a fear of the sort of the creeping Sharia amongst the home population, and what we're also seeing is a clash of two different notions of what is sacred, and we have a slightly more modernistic version probably here in the UK and in Europe as opposed to the Middle East.
Peter Reynolds, David Harris, will be right back with both of you right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Free speech versus state faith. Are these riots we're witnessing giving us a menace of mind control? And we've got on the line Colonel Peter Reynolds from London and David Harris of Insignis Strategic Research from Ottawa. Peter, you were saying about the sensitivity of certain groups to religious iconography or religious symbolism, but is that not the whole point, that there are, that in our societies there are other ways and other factors that are either more important, take precedence, other ideals such as freedom of expression, and there are different ways to manifest our unhappiness with things?
Absolutely, and I think that's the fundamental point. There are different ways of demonstrating our displeasure at some things. What surprises me is that it spread so rapidly in countries like to my own, where there were demonstrations, and no newspaper in this country ever published those cartoons.
Doesn't this militate, the Rick McConomy in Montreal, doesn't this militate in favor of the analysis that says that the blow-up in France was like the first shot? And it was like, you know, it's like saying the First World War was caused by the shooting of the Archduke. You know, to a very large extent, this has been happening. It's there. It's bubbling under. And somehow just the cartoons has been the simple match that lit it off.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it has to have been planned in some way, because the cartoons were originally published last September, for goodness sake. I mean, you know, it's taken 5 months to get everybody on the streets.
Well, we now have the intelligence that shows that this Abu Laban character in Denmark went to the Salafist television stations based in Saudi Arabia and the Arab Emirates. He enlisted clerics in Qatar and Egypt. David Harris, could you speak to this? How sophisticated a network is this?
Well, it seems to be an increasingly sophisticated one around the world. I mean, look, we can even see some element of the phoniness and fabrication of this in the very fact that in October an Egyptian newspaper published these cartoons and there wasn't the slightest reaction. So there seems to be a selective sensitivity on the part of those reacting that would also be consistent, if you think about it, with a kind of racial or at least religious supremacism, which is obviously not our cup of tea.
Which makes the cartoons really a red herring.
Oh, they become, that's right, an instrument to simply for the broader use and interest of those pushing for a worldwide Islamic law, Sharia. And if you think about it, they've witnessed and experienced considerable success at this even in our country here in Canada, because we're now hearing about people who won't publish cartoons or double-thinking and out-thinking themselves about what kind of initiatives to undertake because they don't want to offend. And what that tells us is that the rule of Islamic law is operant in Canada.
And that question of Canada, and in fact, the Anglo-American world becomes very interesting, and I'll throw this over to Peter Reynolds in London. Why is it that, strangely, it's old Europe, as it's sometimes called, that's really striking back, whether it's Norway or Germany or France, who are saying, we have nothing to apologize for, and they're not equivocating. Nicolas Sarkozy, the French Interior Minister, said, it's evident we must protect freedom of expression.
Absolutely.
The Norwegian said, we're not going to apologize. The German said, what do we have to apologize for? Meanwhile, we have Blair and even Bush modifying their reactions. What's going on?
Yeah, I really don't understand. I mean, the demands for governments to apologize what the newspaper actually prints, I find faintly outrageous. You know, a newspaper editor makes certain decisions, a news publisher makes certain decisions on what to apologize. Why should the government apologize? Freedom of the press and freedom of expression are fundamental values that must be defended at all costs, as far as I'm concerned.
Short of incitement to violence.
Absolutely.
Well, we're good at self-loathing, of course, in the West, and we've almost perfected it. Maybe this reflects some of that apologetic approach to what is intolerance and unreasonableness.
Well, David, we have to get stronger philosophically. We have to get stronger on these, Rick McConaughey in Montreal, stronger on these principles and backing them more, or we're just going to turn into having suppressed these uprisings with force.
David Harris in Ottawa. You've been with CSIS at very high levels. What's been happening in Canada this week, these two young fellows, Ray Keating and Rob Walker, threatened by their own administration, threatened, as we'll hear later, with criminal charges. Professor Peter March at St. Mary's University denounced by his own administration. CSIS has people on the ground. Are they seeing, from your old friends there, are they seeing that any of this is being stirred up on the campuses by very organized and well-financed groups?
Well, you'd have to speak to CSIS for that, because I don't speak for them. But the simple fact is, you can be sure that they're keeping an eye out for things. We know that campuses have, in various countries, including the UK, as Peter will know, been hotbeds of this kind of infiltration. And that's extremely disturbing, especially when you can use the liberal democratic process and traditions associated with universities, with higher learning, to subvert those very freedoms we're concerned about. So, yes, indeed, it's going to be a real concern on that level.
Gentlemen, to wrap up, final thoughts from each of you. Where should we go from here? If you had 20 seconds, 30 seconds to tell the leaders of Canada, England, and America what they should do, what should they do, Colonel Peter Reynolds in London first?
Okay, could I just go back to something Adlai Stevenson said a long time ago? A free society is a society where it is safe to be unpopular. I don't mind being unpopular, but I do mind not being safe. And those are the sort of freedoms that I see BC being eroded at the moment.
Beautifully put. David Harris in Ottawa.
I'm somebody who would never have published offensive cartoons in the first place. But the fact is, we've got to make our expectations of individuals, including newcomers, dead clear. And freedom of speech is a bedrock principle. And I would have to say, those who might be offended by any such things must simply get used to it.
Many thanks. Colonel Peter Reynolds from London, David Harris from Ottawa.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. Rick McConaughey in studio with me. I'm Beryl Wiseman, and we're talking about free speech versus state faith. Are these riots we're seeing all over the world menacing our minds? Are they menacing our freedom of speech? And right now, from Winnipeg, we have Gail Asper. And Gail Asper can only be described as a force of nature. She is the campaign chair. I'll give her her official title for today. The campaign chair for the Human Rights Museum of Canada, which will be the only human rights museum in the world. She's also the managing director of the Asper Foundation. Gail, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you very much. I'd hardly call myself a force of nature on Sunday. It's a very laid-back day here. But, yeah, I'm sure by the end of this interview, I will be riled and whipped up again.
We'll get you worked up. You gave a speech one about 4 or 5 months ago in which you said this museum that we're planning is going to be about our stories, your stories, Canadian stories. How do you feel about Canadian stories when two young men like Ray Keating and Rob Walker get their newspaper pulled at the University of Prince Edward Island and get threatened with criminal charges? Or Professor Peter March, a respected philosophy professor at St. Mary's University, gets condemned by his own administration? And when a young man in Montreal gets hassled as a provocateur by joining in an anti-Muslim march, what does that say about our stories in Canada today? What does that say about the dignity and the strength of our national character and our national adherence to liberal pluralism?
Well, I'd say that we need to know our stories a little bit better, and that's exactly why you need the Canadian Museum for Human Rights. And we use the word for because this isn't a passive place where we're going to be studying things just from 200 years ago, although you have to know where you came from in order to understand where you are today and where you want to be tomorrow. And our mantra is that if you are not moving forward with respect to human rights, you're moving backwards. We have to be vigilant. And the rights that we have today that we, most of us, take for granted because we live in this paradise, Canada, the rights we take for granted could disappear tomorrow if we're not vigilant. And those, what's unfolding today is kind of an example of the passion we feel about the issues of human rights and the importance that we have to, you know, to contribute to telling these stories and reminding ourselves we've got to be vigilant.
Now, strangely enough, as Rick McConaughey in Montreal, Gail, strangely enough, you know, we're onto our campuses with where the crisis is happening and people are getting disciplined, they're getting seized, they're getting other ways taken against them to stop them from speaking out, stop them from speaking freely. How much of a tradition in human rights traces back to the fact that on our university campuses is where the first negative reaction seems to happen?
Well, I'm not an expert. I'm a promoter of human rights, and that's the kind of thing actually that would be one of the, you know, when we talk about our history and our history meeting, it can be as much as a year or 10 years ago. It doesn't have to be 200 years ago. The campuses have always been known as places where you should have ultimate freedom of speech. This is where ideas have to be debated without fear of intimidation.
Are our administrators of our universities committed to that, or are they committed in the opposite?
I really think you can't generalize. I think it just really depends on the administrators. But I would say that what we want to do in all of our institutions, in our laws and in our the policies in the universities and in the stories that we'll tell in the museum, we have to encourage and give inspiration to the administrators to remember that we have this history where this is where newspapers and campuses and so on have a history where they should be allowed to debate these things without fear of intimidation.
Gail Beryl here. On a more general level, how do you react to the seeming equivocation of our foreign affairs minister, officials in the United States and in the United Kingdom, as opposed to what was called old Europe, the question we just posed to Colonel Reynolds, that we seem to be equivocating freedom of expression, but while the Norwegians, the Germans, the French are saying freedom of expression only. Are the statements coming out of Ottawa and Washington and London sufficient to strengthen human rights?
Well, you know, I think, and I'm speaking again, I've come from a law background, and I remember the day that the Charter was enshrined in 1982. We were ushered into our law school auditorium, and it was a very momentous occasion. I think this is a very Canadian response. We recognize that the cartoons in question, none of which we've actually seen, I haven't seen, were giving offense. We Canadians don't like to give offense. So I think that's our initial reaction. We want to apologize for giving offense to anybody. Sometimes we probably have to find a little bit more backbone and say, this is not really a matter for the state to even discuss. This is not something that Canada actually needs to speak on. It's a matter of freedom of the press, really, and to let your laws, if there's hate speech or something that contributes to the criminal code, then your legal system's got to come in. It's not really a government issue.
But Gail, this is a very important point. I want to come back to it right after this. Is this really something that the government should discuss? And we'll be back with Gail Asperger right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. Rick McConaughey in studio with me. We're talking about free speech versus state faith. Are these riots we're seeing menacing our freedom of thought, freedom of expression, or are we moving from political correctness to mind control? On the line with us is Gail Asper, campaign chair of the Museum for Human Rights of Canada. Gail, thank you for staying with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
You made a very important point in the previous segment when you said this should not be the government's business. Are we not facing a lot of reversion back into politically correct statutes that during the Trudeau era that you made reference to, the introduction of the Charter, we were getting out of, whether it's the psychological harassment laws, whether it's the statocratic engineering laws, whether it's family law concerns, whether it's the new laws that were passed that concern internet telephony records and our email records. We were moving away from that in the Trudeau period, and now we seem to have come really completely back to status control. How much does that concern you from the standpoint of human rights?
Well, I think you have to be really watchful of these things. You know, states like to kind of infiltrate, and there's this kind of creeping attitude sometimes that people aren't watching. And then, so therefore, you do have to have people. Sometimes they sound like they're very angry wingnuts, but actually, if you listen carefully, you say, hey, you know what, they're probably right. We probably should be a little careful. But back to whether the government should be getting involved, let's just imagine if the Winnipeg Free Press had published these cartoons and other countries started attacking Canada for allowing them to be published. I would say, if I were Canada, hey, back off. This is a matter for the newspapers and our very carefully considered laws regarding hate speech, and that's it. What I would like Canada to say...
Well, that's a breath of fresh air. Gail Asper for Liberal Leader.
Ah, oh, thank you.
There you go. Double up.
Not in this... Not in this round, that's for sure. But
there's time and there's openings.
Why don't our guys in Ottawa say that?
I don't know. What I'd like to hear them say is that they strongly support Denmark's right to conduct its affairs as a democratic country and respect its laws and its freedom of speech and journalistic laws. And that's really, and we should stand shoulder to shoulder with another democratic country like Denmark and allow them to sort out their own affairs as Canada would like its own affairs to be sorted out. We wouldn't appreciate all this meddling and interference from everybody else in the world.
We learned earlier today in the show that basically some of the cartoons that are the subject of the protest were never published anyway. I mean, how do we get away from that sort of underground swelling and organization that brings these things forward in a totally false
You publish that. I think you publish that. I mean, I think this is where you have to find your energy and your backbone and say, come on, guys, let's... And, of course, get the folks that are in the groups who are riding, the moderate folks, to start standing up and speaking out. You know, I find it... I hate it when I'm a female, so sometimes women's groups go far too far, and I don't agree with them. And I hate when people say, "Oh, women are like that," and I suddenly have to be dragged out of my reverie to stand up. But I guess that's the nature of dialogue. That those of us who disagree, who might be a voice of moderation, we do have to find our inner voice and get out there and speak out.
Give up the reverie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have a little more coffee.
Is the Canadian press too compliant, too politically correct, say for the National Post, which?
Well, I would...
And never mind, are they? They are. Why are they?
You know, again, this is part of our tradition. It's our history. We are so worried about giving offense. And, you know, when everyone does give offense, you get beaten up, you get pilloried. But then when I find, and I've seen this happen many times, you get beaten up, you get the angry letters, and then you keep saying it, you keep being thoughtful and making your arguments, and you start to change people's minds.
And you become the hero and the leader.
It's a debate, and we have to learn how to be better debaters without intimidation.
Gail Asper, many thanks for joining us today from Winnipeg.
Oh, well, and I'm happy now. I'm quite awake.
Well, there you go.
Thanks,
we'll
Gail.
Be right back after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Good afternoon, Montreal. We're talking about free speech versus state faith. Are these riots we're seeing changing Canadian political correctness for complete mind control? And in studio with me is Rick McConomy. And on the line, we have Julius Gray, arguably Canada's leading constitutional and civil liberties attorney, and from Halifax, Professor Peter March of St. Mary's University. Now, Professor March, let me welcome you, first of all, and let me start with you.
Okay.
So, good afternoon to you. Now,
good afternoon.
For those who may not have read about Professor March, I don't know how they could have escaped the story, however, he posted cartoons, these famous cartoons, on his office door. On his door. And university guards took them down or ordered them to be taken down. And then he went through a little tussle in a demonstration, and then he's been condemned by his own university administration. Peter March, where are we living?
Oh, we're living in a frightened time, certainly. The difficulty with my posting those pictures according to the university, was that I presented a danger to health and safety. They actually pulled out the rules that we use with respect to slippery floors or pollutants in the air.
Good God.
And said that what I was doing by my action was creating this health and safety.
But what was the health and safety issue?
Well, the health and safety issue, of course, was not specified, but it was understood by everyone at the meeting I went to with the academic vice president, Terry Murphy, that the danger was that we would somehow exacerbate the position with the Islamists, and there would be some extreme action taken in my department, putting other colleagues and my secretary in danger.
So free thinking is now a danger to one's physical health.
Yes, and the striking thing here is that it was the administration's fear of the Islamists that created the basis for their complaint against me. And then the paradoxical thing is that they added, of course, Peter, we respect your academic freedom. You're quite welcome to post these in your office or to have them in your classroom. All right, fine. That's the second stage. I then go to my classroom. I ask the administration whether it's okay to have the cameras in the classroom. The classroom is a glass-walled classroom, a complete wall of glass, and numerous interested parties are standing outside listening, as well as all the media recording. And I launch into a general philosophical discussion of religion and religiosity, arguing that it's a danger to society, certainly at the moment and has been in the past.
You're a professor of philosophy.
Yeah, so suddenly the health and safety regulations don't apply, even though people are watching from the hallway, although the media are recording it, and although I'm saying these very things in my own classroom.
Good God. I know Julius is chafing at the bit right now, but I want to ask Montrealers, 790-0006, Montrealers, Canadians, is this what we fought for? Is this what we fought for in World War II and Korea and the Balkans? Is this what Canada's legacy was for us to reach this point of low limitation and narrow circumstance? Julius Gray, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think it's very frightening. I think freedom of expression, and I've been writing about it and talking about it, is the most beleaguered of all the freedoms, because every group, every lobby believes in freedom of expression except, and it's particular hobby horse. One group doesn't want any questioning two groups, each opposed to each other, don't want any questioning of their orthodoxy on the Palestine-Israel issue. Other groups don't feel that you can joke about sex or transsexual issues. Other groups still have their, each one of them has their own historical quote truth, which has to be preserved at all times.
Julius Gray,
do we need a charter of rights that looks like a phone book? I mean, this is the subject.
Well, we have to ask ourselves a more fundamental question. I think Mr. Trudeau did a very good thing in bringing in the Charter of Rights, but he did a very bad thing in enshrining multiculturalism. I think multiculturalism is nothing more than an invitation to lobbies. And let me make it clear. I believe the Muslims have every right, the religious Muslims, to be demonstrating against these cartoons. I also believe we have every right to be posting these cartoons. They have freedom of expression to say things that I am in total disagreement with. But if we take it far enough, one of the most dangerous things I've heard is the supposedly moderate group saying, you know, we're not sectarian. We would also like to prohibit mocking things that are sacred to other religions.
Yeah, but where has it gone that we're no longer talking about peaceful protest? We're talking about fear of the potential of protest and reaction that causes us to act out of fear.
It has gone to the importance, incredible importance that we and the rest, other countries are only a little bit behind us on this, that we attach to the belonging, to the group, to group rights. In fact, I think the left has been hijacked. In particular, the proper position of the left is that we want to redistribute goods and services, and we want to enshrine individual freedom, and that's how we differ from the totalitarian left.
Julius Gray, off the theory. You're Peter March's attorney. What do you say to St. Mary's University?
I say that's absolutely ridiculous. I challenge it in court. Any attempt to discipline him is entirely wrong. And we do have a right. We do have a right to say things which hurt. You know, in a case called Cabaret Sex Appeal, Mr. Justice Baudouin...
Before we do Cabaret Sex Appeal, Professor Peter March and Julius Gray, stay with us. We'll be with you right after this, and we'll talk about what an institution has a right to impose and not impose.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. Rick McConomy in studio with me. I'm Beryl Wiseman, 790-0006. We want to hear from you. This free speech versus state faith, have we gone beyond political correctness into mind control? On the line right now, Professor Peter March of St. Mary's University, fighting a very intransigent administration. Julius Gray, Canada's leading constitutional civil liberties attorney. Professor March, how isolated, how vulnerable do you feel right now out there?
Oh, I'm completely isolated. The Faculty Association is not defending my case in the sense that they don't feel that my academic freedom is being violated in any way whatsoever. They also
wait a minute. The academics, you're just inside a classroom. You're not even publishing anything. You're discussing cartoons, and they don't feel your academic freedom is being violated.
That's right, and the Canadian Association of University Teachers has been contacted and has said that, in their opinion, so far as they can see, there's no violation of academic freedom because the university is not interfering with what happens in my office and what happens in my classroom.
Good God. Julius Gray, you're not only an attorney, you've been a professor. What goes on behind in the halls of academe?
Well, the academic world in Canada, and particularly in English Canada, has been particularly repressive of freedom on gender issues, on false memory syndrome, and so on. When they get it into the idea into their heads that something is politically incorrect, then it simply cannot be said, and it's such a scandal if it is. But you see, the problem is that freedom of expression is only useful if it extends to things. That's why I mentioned Cabaret Sex Appeal, which said so. Only extends to things which hurt and which insult, because we don't need a protection to say motherhood and apple pie. And the truth is that if we don't allow people to say controversial things and things that appear to be politically incorrect, then nothing can ever change in the society, because you're always afraid to bring up a proposal that is not consistent with current day thinking.
Gentlemen, forgive me for a moment of levity, but is there a certain memo that goes out across Canada as to what's politically correct any given day in this country?
It's amazing how sensitive the whole system is to what is acceptable and what is not. In fact, that's a whole area of academic research, is to watch how groups pass the message as to what is and is not allowed. Say, as you change the administration of a university, there's a flush through of information that goes around, and you're not going to see the memo. Now, I think the fundamental philosophical issue here is that you simply have to distinguish between respect for religious rights and respect for religion. As I'm entirely prepared to respect people's religious rights. I have no problem with that at all, and I would support it. But you mustn't think that that word respect in front of religious rights means that I respect religion in any particular sense or any particular religion.
Because freedom of religion must imply the choice not to be religious.
And indeed, I take a stronger view than that. I happen to take the view that telling your kids they got to take stuff on faith and then holding up a book and saying that everything in this book is absolutely true and anyone who disagrees with it is some sort of an infidel, and I can show you 1,000 quotes from the Quran describing in lurid terms what you have to do to the infidels, I think that's a highly undesirable way to bring up your kids. And without that, I don't see how you get organized.
That's a common basis on all religions, isn't it?
Exactly.
That our religion is right. We have the right answer. We'll respect maybe your right to speak, but you have to have that right to disagree with the content. I think
absolutely.
That's essential.
So you bring up kids that way, it seems to me you're completely violating parenting.
Julius Gray, if you had a choice to deal with this legislatively, how do we do that in terms of this corpus of politically correct stuff that we've got going on provincially and federally?
The most important, the most sinister call was by a group which is genuinely moderate, which said we should have a general law against hurting people's religious position, whatever they are. These are Muslims who said, well, we're not sectarian. We want to protect Christians and Jews, etc.
And who's going to decide that?
The most frightening thing in the world.
Another committee? Another commission? Another group of bureaucrats?
I have a proposal, a simple proposal. I think all of these events show how dangerous and wrong-headed our hate laws are. they should be out. I think we should allow people to say things that we disagree with, and the way to deal with them, first of all, it's safer. We want to know who thinks these things rather than have them hide them and act on them.
But the situation in France, Julius, at the moment, where they say get rid of all outward symbols, you're not to come to school wearing anything that shows that you're different from
them. I would strongly support that French.
I'm more tolerant. I would say that as long as you the outside religious signs like kirpans and turbans and kippahs, etc., do not prevent integration. In other words, they don't cover the person's face entirely. They don't send them into separate institutions like the proposed Sharia for Ontario. I would tolerate them. I would accommodate them. But I also think that freedom of speech should be recognized as the fundamental value, and that all of these restrictions and freedom of speech, even if occasionally...
Julius, we have to cut you off just for a moment. We'll be right back with Julius Gray and Professor Peter March after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
We're back, Montreal. Rick McConomy with me in studio. Free speech versus state faith. Are we moving from political correctness to self-censorship? On the line with us is our special guest, Professor Peter March, from St. Mary's University in Halifax, has faced tremendous opposition for the unpardonable sin of posting some of these cartoons on his office door and in his classroom. And Julius Gray, Canada's leading constitutional civil liberties attorney. Julius.
Yes.
Peter wants more. Peter wants you to say, not because he said this, I'm Peter. I want you to say something more to my administration. I want you to make their sphincter muscles tight. What do you do?
Well, I would say to his administration that their behavior has been absolutely gutless, that defense of freedom of expression has always meant that you take risks. Some people pay a very heavy price. Giordano Bruno paid a very high price for speaking out against these things. Many writers, Marquis de Sade, Flaubert, Joyce, Lawrence, were repressed. But what we absolutely have...
Okay, but this is Canada, Julius. This is true nor strong and free. We know we haven't been strong for years. Now we're not free?
No, we've always pretended that we were so free. You know, Canada has had a brief liberal period since about, smaller liberal, I'm not being partisan about it, since perhaps the 1950s. But generally speaking, we've always been a very conservative party, you know, a country in which free speech was not fully respected. And now, I think the new threat to free speech called political correctness is a very major, major danger, and we've got to wake up. And people like the administrators and like the public servants and like all of those people who have these touchy-feely warm things and want to support every group that says, my God, we're hurt. We would please don't say this.
Julius, we've got John on the line who wants to respond to something. John, you're on. John?
I'm here.
Yes, John.
I'm just wondering, you know, when we're talking about free speech in Canada, if we didn't, you know, gave up that right when we wouldn't allow Netanyahu to speak at Concordia University because there was a group of people.
That's a very good parallel. Professor March, how would you respond to that?
The problem here is that the notion that you can go from the fact that you're religious and sensitive to the notion that somebody else is thereby has their freedom restricted. That's the unacceptable one. That's what went wrong at Concordia, and that's what's going wrong at my university. I'm perfectly prepared to go from I have religious rights to the population has certain duties towards protecting that right. But one of the doozies is not for us to endorse the precepts of that religion. Now, these cartoons violate the precepts of Islam. I accept that. But I don't accept those precepts, and therefore there's nothing wrong with my violating them, however badly they may be offended or hurt.
Well, it's the offense and the hurt that I think has been turned into a right.
Exactly.
And basically, if somebody disagrees with you, you do not have a right to act violently towards them.
And it's extremely easy to show off the fact that you're upset, even though you're not particularly upset, or you're upset about something else. I mean, there's no objective measure of I am legitimately upset. And that's
so we've gone through a period of time in the past couple of years in Canada where at Concordia we've had violent demonstrations to stop people from speaking. Now at St. Mary's, at UPEI, and at Montreal, now we can't even make cartoons about anything.
But I think the caller was correct. Netanyahu, I dislike strongly Mr. Netanyahu, but I think he had a right to speak at Concordia.
Julius Gray and Professor Peter March will be right back with you in a moment.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. Freedom of speech versus state faith. Are we moving from political correctness to absolute mind control? Let's hear from you right now on the line. We have Peter March from St. Mary's University, who's been under attack all week just for posting these famous cartoons on his door. And joining us from London, Ontario, is Michelle Gervais, Media Director for Canadians for Civil Liberties. Welcome, Michelle.
Hello.
Michelle, you've been with us before, and I know that your organization is greatly concerned with the role of state laws that control our personal behavior. But on the broader basis of human rights, what's been happening with the self-censorship must really concern you.
Well, I'll tell you what. I see it as a symbol of the dying and apathetic nature of our Western culture. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to introduce a new thought into this discussion.
I think that was Professor March sighing with joy. I'm not sure.
Oh, indeed. I mean, it's a fundamental problem of a movement towards emotional solutions to legal problems. It's not a promising move.
Michelle, continue.
Exactly. Let me introduce a new thought into this discussion, Beryl. We see the Muslim people rioting. Now, obviously, that cannot be supported. The right to free speech, the right to express your outrage does not include the right to violence, period. It's against the law. But what we do see is an impassioned people willing to take action to support their culture. Now, I'd like to contrast that with Canadians, and I would like to point out how we have made such a virtue out of tolerance and political correctness that we are now being forced to be tolerant of intolerance.
Beautifully put. In other words, we're complicit in our own self-abnegation.
Absolutely.
We don't mean anything anymore.
Absolutely. We've made such a virtue that we see it as a strength, when in fact what it actually is kowtowing to the bully because we don't have strength to stand up to him.
I think the Nixonites used to call this non-denial denials.
It's something like that. Yeah, it's a very strange phenomenon. I'd like to contrast the response of the Muslim people to the call of their Islamic leaderships to protest and riot and be outraged over some silly cartoons published in the newspaper in Denmark that nobody ever saw and made no impact, with the response of the Canadian people to the tyranny of the healthcare system. When I listen to Peter March and how rules about health and safety were used to gag him and take away his principles.
And the same rules were used at Concordia to stop Netanyahu from speaking as well.
Absolutely.
And denying the kind of confrontation that a proper discipline hearing or even a taking of a position would allow.
Exactly. Now they're just, oh my goodness, we have a threat to health and safety. That overrides everything else.
And nobody else has to take a position. Neither
Absolutely.
The union, neither the national organization. No one has to take a position because there's no center point around which the thing is centered.
And the basic assumption here, of course, is that the freedom of speech is not worth taking a risk for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point. If you look at what is happening in Canada today under our health dictatorship, Canadian people are allowing the government to dictate the very intimate details of their lives, you know, how much you will drink, what you will eat, whether you smoke, whether you...
And it's everything.
And the fear
it's
is
everything.
That they'll come and down on you for stepping out of line on any of those things. There's a fine that's going to be there. There's a discipline.
You're going to go to jail. Yep,
you talk exactly. to an elected official, you're a lobbyist, you can't smoke, you look at somebody the wrong way, it's psychological harassment. All these stupid laws instead of our politicians addressing the real political questions of the day.
And where is Where's the outrage of the Canadian people?
Nowhere to be found. When Laurie said Canada answers to a higher destiny, and that destiny was found in Vimy Ridge and under the sands of the Sinai and the Winnipeg General Strike and the struggles of the 20th century, the past 20 years, Canadians have been impotent and mute.
They didn't defend tolerance.
We have lost our passion.
They didn't defend tolerance. They defended something that was much bigger and much more important, which is called freedom.
Rick, I love Michelle's
story. Our tolerance is for intolerance. I think that's a brilliant, brilliant.
Isn't that I was just about to say to Rick, the lovely phrase, that we have a tolerance for intolerance. Professor March, I have to beg your indulgence, and I know your schedule's tight, and our lines are burning, and we want to get these two young men, Ray Keating and Bob Walker, on the line.
Do it.
So I will say good afternoon to you, and we'll talk again, and I know Julius Gray will be talking to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Professor March. Michelle Gervais, stay with us, and we now have Ray Keating.
Hello there, Beryl.
Ray?
How you doing?
How are you? Michelle Gervais?
Yes, I'm here.
No,
Bob Walker?
No, Michelle, are you with us?
I am still here.
Okay, is Ray? Who's on the other line? Ray?
I'm here. Yeah, Ray Keating.
Okay, Michelle, Ray Keating, and our listeners, Ray Keating and Rob Walker, were the editors of the Cadre, the student newspaper of the University of Prince Edward Island, and they published the only periodical, by the way, that published the cartoons. The only one in the country. They were seized by the university administration. They were threatened with criminal charges. The student union refused to let them go ahead with them.
And isn't it an absolute shame that not one person in Canada has written a letter?
Well, Ray did get his beautiful mug in the papers.
It is just why has the surrounding society not supported this young man?
Absolutely.
And his actions.
Ray, what's been happening to you and Rob since we spoke? Since I spoke to Rob on Friday.
Well, you know, on Friday, the student union came after us, and they threatened us, as you mentioned, with legal action if we failed to turn over the papers. They determined that the papers belonged to them under basically the terms of ownership of the newspaper itself, and threatened to charge us with theft if we didn't return them or turn them over to them to be burned.
Ray, we'll get right back to this. Ray Keating, stay with us. Michelle Gervais, right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, we're back. Free speech or state faith? Political correctness or mind control? On the line with us is Michelle Gervais, Director of Media Relations for Citizens for Civil Liberties, and from PEI, Ray Keating and Rob Walker, and our lines are tight, and we're having all kinds of technical difficulties on the PEI end, but Ray, you were just telling us what you were facing when your newspaper, which is the only newspaper in the country, a student newspaper, tried to run the cartoons, and what was the reaction administration?
Well, the administration was obviously upset, and they shut us down basically immediately by closing the campus to our papers.
What threats have you faced?
Just the threat of arrest by the student union when we were not turning the papers over on Friday.
Unbelievable. Michelle, you remember the attack ads during the election?
Yes, I certainly do.
In Canada?
Yes.
In Canada, in our streets, by our government, by our administrators?
Yes. So now it's...
What do you tell this young man?
You know, Ray, you're a hero. You're one of the heroes of
Absolutely.
Western civilization.
Now, Rob Walker, his associate editor is with him, but I don't know if our phones are going to let everybody hear this, but we hear you, Michelle. Go on.
I'm just going to say that it is people like you who still have faith in the underlying principles and values of Western civilization. And I admire your passion, your fervor, and your dedication. And I know that in the end, you will profit from this experience and know that you will have the confidence to develop your own thoughts and express yourself freely. And that is far more important than bowing to the precepts of political correctness.
Hear, hear. Michelle, Ray, Rob, your associate Rob Walker told me this funny story that the administration was trying to get the papers burned, but the local garbage lot or whoever wouldn't burn them. They asked you to go back and recycle them because it pollutes the environment to burn the papers. So we get back to what Michelle said. You know, we've got all these wonderful health laws. So here the state police come in to shut you down. They can't even burn what you wrote.
Now we have book recycling instead of book burning.
It's a minor difference. It's
unbelievable. I want you to be real careful that you never attack Anna Green Gables as either being sexist or anything else. You may discover you'll be burnt again.
But Michelle Gervais in London, Ontario, isn't that the Canadian way? We don't burn books. We recycle it.
Well, absolutely. We wouldn't want to offend the environmentalists.
You know, the sad part about all this is Churchill once said we should never mirror what we seek to destroy. And we're quickly becoming, in this self-censorship, a mirror of the state control of the theocratic tyrants of the Middle East. That's the sad part.
You know, I think within 50 years, we are going to see the spread of the Islamic religion throughout the world because these people are impassioned.
Well,
they're engaged and they're active.
We have to find the passion for freedom in our country and stop with this stuff like sitting back and tolerating, as you said, the health system or other things that just keep banging you on the head and over which you have no control.
You know, we faced in recent history, many times where small populations were burdened by greater aggressors. And the one common, what Nehru called the golden thread of history, is that the just and the right always wins in spite of all terror, in spite of all pain, the just and the right win.
But unfortunately, it takes continuing surveillance, and it takes heroes like Rob and Ray.
And they have to not stop.
And they have to not stop, and we all have to not stop. Luckily, in Canada...
And every Canadian to get mad.
Yes. Luckily, in Canada, we can affect political process. Within the law, we can write letters, we can stage protests, and we can engage in means to sway public opinion, like this radio show.
We need the will to do it. I would just like to say to our guests and our listeners, thanks very much to Chris Bombry for taking care of the technical end, our producer Val Prudnikoff, and to all of you at Montreal, in Canada, and around the world listening to us on the World Wide Web. Some great words from a great Canadian. This Northern Dominion, under one set of laws and one flag, has room for one great people. There is no room for that greatness if we succumb under that same law and under those same laws to 1,000 squabbling particularities. We're out of here. Good day to y'all.
Good day. Men can be heard Sundays from noon to 2. Beryl Wiseman is the president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal.